Okay, let's talk about some diss. Here we go. Welcome to this episode of Just the Diss. My name's Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. And Rob G is back for New Arrivals.
That's right.
Which is always a blast.
Yeah, man.
Thank you, Rob, as always, sir.
Thank you. Always a lot of fun. Seems to be a popular column, if you will, of the Just the Discs itinerary. So always happy to be back.
Yeah, it's great. And as I've said on other episodes of this thing here, I love putting these stacks together. Uh-huh. And I am sometimes messing with them right up until we record.
Wow!
Because that's how picky I get about this stuff.
I've got some curveballs for you tonight, so hope you're ready.
Quite a few. I like curveballs.
Quite a few.
Well, why don't you kick it off then, sir? Let's hear what you got.
Sure. So my first disc is I'm going 3D right away. I'm going to go right to it.
All right.
You know, on brand. I don't want to disappoint our audience. This is a movie. Well, I'm going to say the title and then I'll give you the context of how I viewed this fine feature. But my first pick tonight is Ready Player One 3D.
From director Steven Spielberg comes a world where you can do anything.
You can climb Mount Everest with Batman
and be anyone.
Iron Giant.
Lex Luthor.
Chuck.
Kong.
Oh, yeah.
I just figured it out.
This year, experience an adventure of a lifetime.
Cool.
Ready Player One. Only in cinemas.
All right.
Yeah, so Steven Spielberg, his latest, I believe. Yeah, this is the last movie he did. Yep. My fiance was in town, and this is currently her favorite movie. Next to this, it's Back to the Future. But she loves Ready Player One. She loves the movie. She loves the book. She's really into it, and it got her enthusiasm got me excited to see the movie. And so I did see it in theaters in 3D, which I enjoyed. I ended up buying – so I bought this from the – actually, she bought it for me, more accurately, from the UK. So this is a Amazon UK purchase, Ready Player One 3D. I think it's still available. In fact, if you just look up – regular US Amazon, I think this disc will come up, this 3D one. There was a really fancy French disc as well that had all the language tracks, and I think it combined all the special features from all the various releases, because I think they did watched the 4-hour, I guess it was on HBO, the 4-hour Steven Spielberg documentary, which kind of went through his entire career. And I found that whole thing fascinating. And, you know, it just reminds you what a force Steven Spielberg is, whether you like him or not. Now, it's interesting because it's when a piece of material works, it really works. But then, you know, the movie before this was the BFG, which I also have in 3D. And that one's just okay. It's like 30 minutes too long. It's like a 2-hour movie that really should be 90 minutes. And, you know, over-reliance on CG and trying these like forced perspective tricks, which is fine. But I think for Ready Player One, it works 100%. And basically it's, you know, kind of this not too distant future where everyone is virtually plugged into kind of this place called the Oasis, which is kind of a virtual world where you're an avatar. It could be one of your favorite characters from your video game or just some pop culture thing. And that's where you kind of go to escape the world and make friends and all this other stuff. This giant corporation is trying to find these hidden Easter eggs that the guy that created the Oasis left in there, because basically if you could solve these Easter eggs, you win the Oasis, you own the company. So in doing so, there's so many pop culture references, everything from Jurassic Park to Back to the Future to Batman to Mortal Kombat. It's all in there. And it's just a lot of fun. It's a fun ride. I know sometimes, you know, the idea of things being meta or ultra reliant on references might be annoying or come off as not original, but it's actually really well done in this, in terms of the idea that we're all kind of living in our own our own version of the Oasis and not really communicating with each other in the outside world anymore. So it's got an interesting message to it. And but more importantly, I no matter what you no matter how you view this, I'm sure the 4K looks great, but this is one of the discs in my 3D collection that I think most benefits from the 3D format. And the reason being is because there is so much information happening on any given screen. There's like so many characters from things that you'd recognize from your whole life. And it just looks kind of like a mess to me on regular Blu-ray or 4K. But in 3D, you really can differentiate all the layers and all the things that are going on. And it's just one of the best looking 3D titles I own. So if you haven't seen it and you're able to get this 3D version, this is the absolute way to watch it.
I may have to do this. I already have the 4K. I can confirm that it does look great. However, I am a pretty big fan of this movie and I love the book. The Will Wheaton, you know, narration was pretty helpful in getting me on board, but it's just a great book. And I'm not one of those people that was like, and I didn't necessarily hear this too much, but that was sort of like down on the adaptation. Cause I don't know. I thought the movie is the movie. The movie is like sort of supplemental to the book. And I think it works great on its own. And I don't know. It's just complemented the book in this way that I really liked. But I totally get what you're saying about the 3D and how that could be like really advantageous in a movie like this, because there is just so much going on at all times. It's really a three-dimensional universe that the Oasis, you know, kind of purports itself to be. And so there's so much that I'm sure I would pick up on more from a 3D viewing. So
it is an assault on all your senses when you're watching this thing. And the 3D just makes it a little bit more manageable to kind of make out what's going on the screen. And, you know, the cast is great too. I love Olivia Cooke is Artemis, aka Samantha.
Oh, she's great.
And she was on Bates Motel. I really loved her on that show. Ben Mendelsohn is kind of like the villain, if you will. He's the guy that runs the evil corporation. And it's just, I don't know. There's a lot of joy to the idea of seeing. There's never a guarantee you're going to get a sequel to any movie that you love. And so being able to see these characters again, whether it be the Iron Giant or to get to relive a scene from The Shining, there's a thrill to it that I really appreciate and love.
Absolutely. No, I get it, man. I love that it's your girlfriend's favorite movie too. It's that kind of a movie for me. Like, I feel like there are just certain movies that can be people's favorite movies. And I mean, there's certainly, you know, any movie can be somebody's favorite movie, but then there are the ones where somebody tells me it's their favorite movie and I'm like, really? Okay. But then with something like this, like, I don't know why, I just totally get it. It's like that kind of a movie that, you know, it's got so much going on. It's so rich with stuff that, I don't know, I just think it's got a really nice ending, you know, and I just like it a lot. So I think that's a cool choice.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, by the way, so shout out to my fiance Alyssa, but also to our friends Natasha and Alex, because this was part of a triple feature. The earlier in the evening we'd done a double feature of 10 to Midnight and Cobra, fully inspired by you and Brendan Small, who had done that episode.
Nice.
I told you both I swapped the movies because I just feel like the more fun one to end on would be Cobra, whereas 10 to Midnight gets kind of gnarly. So it's like, oh, let's start with that one to really like get into the groove. And then we went into Cobra, and then, you know, Alyssa just really wanted to watch Ready Player One in 3D. And I'm glad she insisted, because everyone stuck it out for the triple feature. It's like, all right, let's do this. And we were all pretty blown away by how amazing the 3D presentation was on this disc. So
fantastic.
Totally worth it. Great, great triple bill, but on its own, it's fine too.
10 to Midnight, Cobra, Ready Player One in 3D. I like it.
Yep. There you go.
That's awesome, dude.
So what do you have for me?
All right. So I got a little Criterion action to start out here. This is Detour from 1945. One of the most, I don't know, well-known and sort of beloved in film noir circles.
The way I could cross country was to thumb rides. For even after hawking everything, I only had enough money to eat. Money. You know what that is. It's the stuff you never have enough of. Little green things with George Washington's picture that men slave for, commit crimes for, die for. It's the stuff that has caused more trouble in the world than anything else we ever invented. Simply because there's too little of it. At least I had too little of it. So it was me for the thumb. Ever done any hitchhiking? It's not much fun, believe me. Oh yeah, I know all about how it's an education, how you get to meet a lot of people and all that. But me, from now on, I'll take my education in college, or in PS 62, or I'll send $1.98 in stamps for 10 easy lessons. Thumbing rides may save your bus fare, but it's dangerous. You never know what's in store for you. You hear the squeal of brakes. If only I had known what I was getting into that day in Arizona.
Like, if someone asked me what is film noir, there are a few films that I point to sort of demonstrate the, I mean, obviously the stylistic side of it, but I think the side that sometimes gets left out is the fatalism. The side of a character that is basically going down a shitty road and there is no way they're going to get out of it. You know, so what you're dealing with here is a character played by Tom Neal, who he's basically like, I think he's like an out of work musician maybe, or he's a nightclub pianist, down on his luck nightclub pianist. He is hitchhiking from New York to LA and he gets a break. And this guy picks him up. Dude's a little talky, but he's going all the way to LA. So it's like a hitchhiker's dream. You don't have to deal with anybody else. And through a weird turn of events, this all happens early in the movie. And the movie's pretty short too, by the way, which is another thing that's neat about it. It's only like 70 minutes. But so the driver of the car ends up dead through an accident. And so the Tom Neal character has to determine, shit, what am I going to do about this? I'm probably going to get blamed for this murder. I'm just going to take on this guy's identity and, you know, head to LA as planned, keep my head down and hope, you know, everything's okay. So that doesn't seem like a smart move necessarily, but you can kind of see why he would not want to risk trying to be honest with the cops. The twist comes a little later when he picks up a woman that is by the side of the road and she actually knows the guy that used to be driving the car. And so she basically is like, dude, I know you did something to that guy. And basically it becomes like a sort of a blackmail situation. You're going to do whatever I want because I know that you did something bad. And so then he's in this whole mess. And that's by no means the end of the movie. There's a whole lot more that happens after that. But so that's sort of the setup, is this guy in trouble keeps getting in more trouble. And it's just a really fantastic example of film noir in terms of, like I said, the style and the story and the characters that you just love to see in this kind of movie. It's directed by Edgar G. Ulmer. And he was a guy that has like a really interesting history because he started in low budget pictures and then he got an opportunity to make one with Universal. And Carl Laemmle was like he was sort of in good with Carl Laemmle at a point, and Laemmle let him make a movie. He made The Black Cat with Bela Lugosi and George and Boris Karloff. And for those that haven't seen that movie, it's pretty nuts. It's a very strange movie, and he brought like a whole bunch of like German expressionism stuff, which he uses certainly to his advantage in Detour, but this is years later. You know, that's This is 1945. Black Cat is like 1932 or something like that. So anyway, he makes this movie. It's crazy. And Carl Laemmle happens to be out of the country on vacation, I guess. This is something you learn in the special features. There's a great interview with this guy, Noah Eisenberg, on the disc. It's a 21-minute interview, and there's a lot of great stuff in it. But one of the things is that he makes this movie when Carl Laemmle's out of the country. Carl Laemmle comes back, and he's like, basically, what the fuck is this? I would never have okayed this. I can't believe you made this movie. And you find out the budget, and it was actually not that bad for a movie of that period. It was like $90,000+, which is, you know, not cheap in 1932, but it's, I guess, Frankenstein and Dracula costs like 3 and 4 times that much money at that time. So anyway, Carl's not happy with him, but I guess the bigger issue is that he makes a play for the wife of Carl Laemmle's nephew, like his favorite nephew, and breaks up their marriage. And then he's persona non grata and, you know, basically gets himself blackballed out of Hollywood between making this bad movie, or this movie that Carl Laemmle's not happy with, and then going after Carl Laemmle's, you know, nephew's wife. He shoots himself in the foot pretty bad. So he ends up, you know, making some films in Yiddish, and then he gets some Poverty Row studio stuff, which, you know, PRC is the name of the studio he was working for that this movie was produced through. And he had sort of found his niche there, but obviously there's no money in these movies. So, you know, he wasn't necessarily riding high, you know, financially. But it does end up being kind of his legacy film. You know, it's just a really great film noir. Like I said, it's, I don't know, it's got this great voiceover. You know, there's this song that plays heavily into the movie, which I won't, you know, give away how it plays into it, but that's, you know, evident right from the beginning. And I just love the way the whole thing unfolds and where it goes and how fast it moves. And it looks great. And this is one of those movies that was available like Night of the Living Dead and a lot of, you know, public domain transfers. And so there's a great 11-minute featurette on the restoration, and they talked about, you know, finding a nitrate print in like Switzerland or something, but it had, you know, subtitles on it, you know, etched into the nitrate, and so they had to combine a couple things. But I've never seen the movie look this good, and it's great that it is, because it's really a gem. It's a classic. So like I said, you've got this Noah Eisenberg interview, which is wonderful. The disc also includes a 2004 documentary called Edgar G. Ulmer, The Man Off Screen, which features interviews with Ann Savage, who's the woman in the movie, filmmakers Roger Corman, Joe Dante, and Wim Wenders. And it's got Bogdanovich is in it too. He apparently, back in the day when he was interviewing everybody, you know, like John Ford and Orson Welles and all these people, he interviewed Edgar G. Ulmer. So you have some of the original audio of him interviewing the director back then that's kind of intermingled into this movie. And they also do a cool thing where they're like putting people in like a poor man's process, like stage with a convertible, which is the car that he drives in Detour. It's not the same model or anything, but they put the interview subjects in the car and put a, you know, rear projected screen behind them, so it looks like they're driving while they're interviewing them, which I just thought was a nice, nice touch. Anyway, great disc from Criterion. This is not Blu-ray related, but I'm still really excited about it. So I just wanted to mention that the Criterion channel is now up and running, and this is one of the discs that they have in full form on the service. So you can go and watch the movie and watch all the features I just mentioned on the Criterion channel, were you so inclined to try it out before you get the disc. I do recommend you get the disc because it looks great. But if you were interested, you could see it that way to start.
Very cool.
So anyway, that's Detour.
Nice, man. And you know what? I'm going to go back momentarily before my next pick. Forgive me, listeners. We're recording this a lot later in the evening than we usually do, so I'm not with it right now. this is a Blu-ray podcast. You probably want to hear about what's on the Blu-ray.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So with Ready Player One, I'll just mention quickly. There's a feature-length documentary that covers the entire process of that movie. Ooh. It's like, I think it's like 90 minutes long, and I think it's broken up into like featurettes, but there's a play all option where you could just watch the whole thing as one extensive 90 minute documentary. And it's really excellent. And you know, that's the thing. I miss these kind of features on Blu-rays, because a lot of times they just do, and I don't know about you, I'm not really a fan of these like 10 minute single interview like segments. So anyways, Ready Player One not only looks great in 3D, but has a pretty extensive feature length documentary about every aspect of the making of it, including adapting it, which is really, really cool. So anyway, pick two. So this is my pick of the year so far in terms of Very a nice. Gem. And this was introduced to me by my good friend David Scow.
Ooh.
I went to go visit him recently, and we were watching The Horror of Party Beach, a Severin Films release, again at my fiance's request. And we knew that it was not going to be a good movie. And so the deal was, we'll watch that, but we have to watch a great movie right after. And he said, hey, have you seen Cold in July with Michael C. Hall? And I'm like, yes, love it. And he's like, how about Small Town Crime with John Hawks?
Most mornings I'm about as worthless as a park bench in hell. Usually don't start thinking straight till I get a couple cold ones in me.
I know you found her. I know you feel responsible, but you're not in this.
You shouldn't be fiddling around with some dead girl's phone.
I think what Kelly is trying to say is that you are no longer a cop.
Don't tell me what I'm trying to say.
This is important to me. I'd like to find out who killed your daughter.
What's your rate?
You never really know with this kind of...
$2,500 a week. You all right?
Just waking up, Steve.
Good time that's been waiting.
We're looking for Mike Kendall.
Good time.
Y'all got a plan? We just want to jump into an old-fashioned dog fight.
Both.
When I think of all the good time that's been wasted.
You're screwing a hooker.
I'm gaining her trust.
This could end up really nice for you.
Police have a tendency to miss certain details. Important details. And those are the types of details that I pick up.
When I was fighting, I could have done the right.
You ready?
Is that all you bringing? That musket?
It's a high quality musket, son.
All of that.
You get cute, you get stupid. Well, we both know how that ends.
I was reducing.
We do this. There's no halfway.
Good time.
Mind if I finish my beer?
You drunk?
That's good time.
I'm comfortable.
Talking about good
time. What is that, blood in there?
Yeah. That's going to be extra.
And I was like, you know what? I don't even think I've ever heard of that. And this is a 2017 movie that it's got a great, great cast. Not only is it John Hawks is the lead, but Anthony Anderson, Clifton Collins Jr., Octavia Spencer, Robert Forster, Katie Lotz. I mean, there's so many interesting, cool people in it. And I mean, speaking of film noirs, this is like a great modern film noir. So Small Town Crime. And basically, this came out under the radar, but basically John Hawks plays kind of a disgraced ex-cop who has a huge alcohol problem. And as the story unfolds, you kind of understand how his alcoholism led to a really terrible mistake on the job. And now nobody like trusts or likes him because basically he's a fuck up cop. And one night after a bender, he wakes up in the middle of a field in his car. He goes to drive home. He discovers the barely alive, beaten body of a girl. And he brings her straight to the hospital. And unfortunately, she expires. And he just kind of becomes obsessed with trying to figure out what happened to this girl, who murdered her, because now it's officially a murder. And it's basically, his attempt to get some sort of redemption for the mistakes he's made. Like, if I could just figure out this one thing with this girl, then maybe I could start putting the other pieces of my life back together. But the comical part of it is he is a total fuck up in every regard. So it doesn't exactly go according to plan. And then you get all these quirky characters like Robert Forster, like Clifton Collins Jr., that have ties to the bigger mystery about what really happened. And it's just a lean, mean, excellent film, modern film noir. And there's some really great stuff on this disc too. There's some commentary tracks. It's written and directed by a brother duo, the Nelms brothers, S. Holm, I think I'm saying that right, and Ian. And so they did a commentary on here. There's a second technical commentary. And then there's some really cool little featurettes. They're really short, but they talk to the directors and the actors, and it's basically about the story, about their characters, about just small town crime in general and how that leads to great stories. But this is just, it's just such a, I mean, literally, I've never heard of this movie. And it's got this incredible cast and came out in 2017. And I mean, John Hawks is on fire. I mean, that guy is just terrific. So if you're looking for something really interesting and different, this is it. Small town crime for sure.
Yeah. And this is really neat because this is a rare opportunity where I got sort of a peek into your pile before we did the show. And you had mentioned this particular movie as one to look for. And so I got a chance to check it out before the show, and I also really enjoyed it.
Oh, great.
I thought it was very good, and I totally agree. Hawks is just incredible in the movie. And Clifton Collins Jr. kind of steals the show as this, I guess he's like a pimp, is he? Like
he is a pimp
named Mood.
The thing is, yeah, there's the thing about this movie, and again, I knew nothing about it going in. I didn't see a trailer. It's just, it literally was pulled off a shelf saying, oh, you have to see this. And so I think everything we've said is more than enough for you to know, but it's very satisfying to see how some of these characters come together,
yes,
especially for the finale.
Absolutely.
Like that's what made the movie for me, is the most unlikely of alliances sometimes makes for the finest entertainment. So
yeah, I agree.
Just a blast. I really love this movie.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And before you had mentioned it, I also had never heard of the movie. So that's always intriguing to me, especially when it's in, you know, neo-noir and it's a good one. It's definitely the kind of thing I'm glad to have you bring up on the show, because I really hope that, you know, you can turn some more people onto it like you did me, because
yeah, 100%.
Yeah, well worth checking out. Good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the Blu-ray's out there. It's fair. I think I bought it for $10. I saw this at my friend's house and I bought the Blu-ray like the next day just so I could talk about it on the show. And I think it's on Amazon like Prime for like $4 if you want to just rent it. But it's a keeper as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I was really impressed. So thank you for the recommendation, sir.
You got it, man.
All right, well, I'm going to go more sort of film noir stuff, basically. This is one that Twilight Time just put out. It is called The Big Fix from 1978.
What do you know about the underground? We need someone who can move in that world, someone who will be trusted. I understand you are the man. Now, what do you know about the underground?
What everybody else does.
You went to Berkeley, didn't you?
That's right.
Didn't you know some of them personally?
That's not true. I just knew people who knew people like everybody else.
What about Howard Eppes?
What about Howard Eppes? Brothers and sisters and fellow Californians, join with me in supporting Miles Hawthorne for governor. I have spoken with the congressman, and I am convinced he can teach us to cooperate the way others have done in Europe and Asia. Back a man who backs the people, share the wealth, Walter Hawthorne, Howard Eppes. It's not funny, I know.
Do you realize what that can do to us in Orange County? Share the wealth?
Well, did he talk with the congressman?
Of course not. My problem is finding out who's behind this, whether it's Eppes or not, and stopping him fast. And if it's a Dilworthy smear, I want everybody to know about it.
Who do you think won the game tonight?
Where did you get this guy?
Oh, shit, Moses.
Oh, shit. I was watching the game. I was playing Clue, perfecting my craft. You come along and drag me out here for Miles goddamn Hawthorne. This is a man who thinks that Captain Kangaroo is a politically controversial figure.
I will go with you, Moses. Maybe together we can persuade Eppis to lay off.
That's assuming that we can find him. I mean, the cops have been looking for this guy for 7 years, right? And they're not exactly unschooled in this kind of business?
Look, you were a campus activist in the 60s. You've got a background for this job. You want it or don't you? Here's $150 on account.
Well, some people sell out for 7 minutes on a talk show. Okay. Where'd you get this thing?
Someone from the printer's office sent it to us. A man named,
Johnson.
Right. His address is on the back.
Okay. He's counting turkeys.
Now, this just ran at the New Bev recently with... Oh, shit. I can't remember what it played with now. I'll have to think about that a second. But it's one of my favorite sort of underrated and under-talked about detective movies from the 70s. Did it play with The Long Goodbye? It might have played with The Long Goodbye.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. It's solid, though. Basically... It stars Richard Dreyfuss in the lead. He plays a detective called Moses Wine, and he is in his prime. You know, this is a few years after Jaws, right around the time he's winning the, or he's in The Goodbye Girl. I can't remember if he won for that or not, but he's really just in that perfect Dreyfuss, you know, right around Close Encounters. Like, he is hot, and you can see why. And it's just a movie that sort of slipped through the cracks, considering that pedigree and where he was in his career. It's surprising that more people haven't seen this, but part of it is it was only available on VHS until, I want to say, there was an MOD DVD within the past 5 or 6 years, I feel like, maybe just slightly longer than that. So it was really hard to see, for one. I remember it had cropped up on Netflix early on when Netflix was, you know, streaming movies, and then it was on Amazon Prime for a minute, but you have to know to look for a movie like this once it's disappeared. So I think getting a Blu-ray release definitely helps. The gist of the story basically is that he's a private eye. He's hired by a former college girlfriend played by Susan Anspach, who's another one. The cast includes his ex-wife is played by Bonnie Bedelia. One of the things I love about it is that he's a dad detective. So, you know, he's constantly dragging his kids around with him in a nice way. You know, it's cute. He gets stopped by a cop, and he's like, I got to tell you, I got a gun in the glove compartment. And the cop's like, well, let me see it. And they pull out the gun and like the place where the bullets go. I don't even know what do you call that in a revolver? That has like completely gone, and there's like a crayon sticking out of the top of the gun. And the cop is like, this is no way to treat a firearm. He's like, I got kids, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, it's just a great Dreyfuss role. But anyway, so more of the cast before I get into the plot. John Lithgow, F. Murray Abraham. I'm trying to think. There was a couple other... Mandy Patinkin shows up for just like a one or two line spot. That's really great. But anyway, so he's hired to do this thing for his ex-girlfriend from college. Basically, she's working for taxi driver, like Palantine. She's working for a liberal candidate in California. I think he's running for governor of California. And John Lithgow plays the guy who's sort of like heads up the campaign office and who is not really impressed with Moses Wine. But they have a problem because this flyer has come out that links their candidate to this like, you know, super far left radical guy named Howard Eppis, who's played by F. Murray Abraham. And they want to know who made these flyers and who's trying to sabotage the campaign. So they hire him to try and figure it out. And of course, it's one of those things that once he gets into it, he starts to figure out there's a lot more going on than just somebody trying to sabotage a campaign. Like, it's a much bigger deal. And so it's kind of a cool mystery unfolds kind of thing. But he's sort of a down on his luck kind of detective himself, you know, like he's divorced and everything. And he's just, you know, he could be in better shape than he is, but he plays, I just feel like Dreyfuss plays this down and out kind of character really well. It reminds me a little bit of like his character in Stakeout or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, just, you know, kind of a con artist, you know, but affable. And anyway, so it's just one of those detective films that's really fun to watch as it unfolds. One of my favorite scenes has him going to this prison to meet with two of the known associates of this guy, Howard Eppes. And they are sitting at a table in this prison cell, and or it's prison, you know, visitation room, and they turn on the radio, and because the two people are like really paranoid about people listening to their conversations, so they're like, turn on the radio, and they sing along with the song that's playing, and then as they're singing, like, they'll write things down on a note card, and they'll kind of answer questions in the midst of singing song verses, which I think is really funny. So anyway, that's just a funny little bit, but anyway, it's just unfolds into being this bigger mystery thing, and Dreyfuss is great in it, and I'm so excited to have a Blu-ray. Unfortunately, all we have is an isolated score track in the theatrical trailer on this one, which is too bad. I would love to have anything at all, but to be honest, I love this movie so much that I was just excited to get a disc of it. So, you know, props to Twilight Time for putting it out. They haven't put out a ton of Universal movies. This is a Universal-owned film, so I'm hoping we get to see a bit more Universal stuff from them. We've been seeing Universal stuff from Shout Select, but I'd love... There's so much untapped stuff in that... vault, if you will. I think Kino Lorber just announced they're putting out The Brink's Job, for instance, and that's an early Friedkin movie about this armored car robbery that's really great. That's another Universal film. So clearly, you know, Universal's opened things up, and it's very exciting for me. But anyway, this one's The Big Fix, my next one there.
Wonderful. Okay, so this is where I'm gonna throw some curveballs. My next two selections are a little weird, and I apologize to our listeners. I'm going to pull back the curtain of the Wizard of Oz here and let you know that we record this way in advance, and so there's a good chance there's going to be a little bit of overlap. I'm probably going to talk about these next two titles on Shockwaves. But this is a Blu-ray podcast, so I'm going to talk specifically about the Blu-rays here. This next one is only available as an import from France. And as of by the time you hear this, I think it will officially have been ceremoniously released, I'll say, to VOD. I think it was scheduled for an April 22nd soft release that nobody knew about. I'm talking about Under the Silver Lake.
Oh.
And... this is the follow-up, the It Follows follow-up from writer-director David Robert Mitchell.
I saw you spying on me earlier.
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
See you tomorrow.
Good.
Who moves out in the middle of the night?
Nothing strange about it. She wanted to leave. How does that not make sense?
I don't understand why she didn't tell me.
Maybe she didn't like you. Maybe she knows you're poor and haven't paid your rent.
I found some kind of code or like secret message in her apartment.
It means stay quiet.
Our world is filled with codes, subliminal messages. From Silver Lake to the Hollywood Hills.
Could any of this be connected to Sarah?
I know this girl.
There's a message in the music.
Really think you're gonna find a hidden message in a pop song?
1, 2, 3.
Can't quite see it, but I'm close.
Honey, how are you?
Mom, I'm fine. Mostly fine.
Why do we assume that all of this information is what we're told it is? Maybe there are people out there who are more important than us, more powerful, communicating things in the world that are meant for only them and not for us.
Yeah.
Oh, you think that's weird?
A little.
How did you feel about It Follows?
I'm a big fan.
Yes, I am a big fan too. And so... what happens, I'm always fascinated by these types of filmmakers. And I mean this in the nicest way possible. Richard Kelly with Donnie Darko going straight to Southland Tales. What's the Girl Who Walks Home Alone at Night to the Bad Batch. and now it follows to Under the Silver Lake. This is a 2.5 hour movie where he really is just going for it. And I don't know if it's genius or not. I watched it with Elric Kane,
who
undoubtedly will bring it up on one of your shows as well.
Sure.
And we had quite an interesting time. We had a lot of fun watching it. So first and foremost, Andrew Garfield is amazing in this movie. He is the lead of the film, and he really is giving a fearless performance, because basically I can't even tell you what this thing is about because there's like seven concurrent plot lines going on, and they all sort of revolve around Andrew Garfield. But basically he's kind of this slacker loser guy that just lives in an apartment, and he becomes obsessed with this girl that lives across the all across the way from him in the same complex. And so he ends up by fate talking to her one night and like kind of hanging out, and they have a great time, and he's really kind of like elated by meeting this new woman in his life. And literally the next morning she completely disappears, and by disappears I mean the apartment's empty, her roommates are gone, everybody's gone. And so he's like, wow, that's weird. They just got up in the middle of the night and left. And so basically he becomes obsessed with trying to figure out what happened to this girl. And it's so bizarre because Elric and I were talking about it. This is literally the best way I could describe it is this is hipster Hitchcock. It is. I don't know if it's satirically making fun of Silver Lake hipster culture or if it's genuinely trying to emulate it. I mean, there's several really, to me, there were several fairly hilarious Kurt Cobain references, including one right at the beginning, in the middle of a sex scene, which I thought was hilarious. And that's the thing. The humor is like, it's got an interesting, quirky, dark humor to it. And yet there's some dark things that happen here. And it's just, God, I don't know how to, when I say Hitchcock, what I mean by that is not only in the way that it's shot, but the way it's scored like a tradition, like Vertigo, like it's got that like Bernard Herrmann-esque score. And I think it's Disaster Piece who did the It Follows score, but It Follows had more of a electronic video game, like sounding scary score. And this just like, I don't know how to describe it, but when you hear an orchestrated thing kind of telling you how to feel, like din, 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 whatever, you just feel like you're in a classic film. So this is one that's going to be, I guarantee you that A24 probably asked him to cut like a half hour out of this movie or something, which is probably why they weren't psyched about putting it out theatrically. But as far as I know, it should be on VOD now here in America. However, I'm a physical media guy. I love owning it on physical. It looks better on Blu-ray than any digital service, no matter how fast your internet could be. The only downside is there's no special features on this. But it was just I got this at a time when the release feature really up in the air and nobody knew. So I had to get it. So
cool.
Under the Silver Lake is on Blu-ray and it is a Region B release. So that's the other thing, is you will need a multi-regional player to play the sucker.
Gotcha. Now I'm curious. I mean, I'm one of those people that is actually kind of a fan of Southland Tales, for example. Like, I mean, it's no Donnie Darko, but I'm fascinated by it. I think it's incredibly flawed, but intriguing in a lot of ways.
This is that. This is his version of that, where nobody said no to him. He really took some wild swings. And that's the thing. It's like, I don't know if it's, like, I can't tell if it's indulgent or just brilliant. I mean, the mystery behind how he's trying to figure this stuff out and what it all means and if it means anything at all, it's going to blow your mind a little bit, and you're going to be talking about it for quite a while. So
I like it. I'm sold.
Yeah. It's something else. Under the Silver Lake.
Cool. Okay. The next one I have here is a Scream Factory release. This is another in Scream Factory continuing to put out Val Lewton movies, which I'm very excited about. And they just announced another one recently. They announced The Leopard Man, which is one of my favorites from the Lewton canon. But this one is also one of my favorites, and that's The Body Snatcher from 1945. This is based on Robert Louis Stevenson, It is directed by Robert Wise. And it is one of my favorite performances by Boris Karloff ever.
Wow.
It's really good stuff. So the gist of the story is it's Edinburgh, 1831. It focuses on basically a young medical student who is working with this seasoned doctor. And you come to find out that the doctor is, in order to help with his teachings and his own research, has taken to getting some folks to help him get bodies for his research, if you will. So what ends up happening is he has made a rather unhealthy sort of alliance with this guy played by Boris Karloff, who is a grave robber. I think he also like buries people too, but he's definitely taken to digging up folks to give to this doctor. And so we're seeing this sort of story through the young doctor's eyes. And, you know, he ends up meeting Karloff one night when Karloff is delivering a body ostensibly to the doctor, but instead the kid is the only one at the morgue or wherever medical place that their schooling is happening or where the doctor works. And so the kid is forced to deal with Karloff, and he's just so, like, evil, like, so sort of aware of, you know, how evil he is and what he's doing, and the fact that he has got, like, this respectable doctor kind of in his pocket because he knows that the doctor definitely doesn't want it to get out that he's using this guy to get bodies.
You'll find the specimen in good condition. He was as bright and lively as a thrush not a week long gone. A likely lad, I'm told. You're a new assistant?
I'm Donald Fettes.
I'm very pleased to know you, Master Fettes.
Mr. Gray?
That's right. Cabman Gray. I've had some dealings with McFarland in the past, you understand. And I've always gotten on with his assistants. They're providing, of course, they understand my humble position.
Dr. McFarland said I should pay you.
Of course. That's the soul of the business. The pay. I have no doubt you have the key in your pocket. And the desk is over there. My fee is, as usual, £10. Now, although it's none of my business, I'd make the proper entry if I were you. Received one specimen, £10, shall we say, from a Macduff, a royal name.
Good night, Mr. Gray.
My respects, Master Fettes. And may this be the first of many profitable meetings.
Well, well, my boy. Your first meeting with the redoubtable Gray. You can count it a milestone in your medical career.
So they have this really uneasy relationship, you know, very spiteful and hateful, especially from the doctor, who just like hates Boris Karloff, but has really come to depend on him and is now stuck with him, basically. So it feels like almost quasi Twilight Zone-ish in some ways, in terms of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, so it just, the story progresses from that, basically. You have this uneasy relationship and some bodies and, it goes to some darker places, and I love it. I think it's really, really good. And like I said, Karloff is almost never better. I think he's so incredible in this performance. Yeah, so this is one of my favorite Luton films, and I'm so glad that Scream is doing this with the Luton stuff. And we've talked about the classic film stuff they're doing, the monster movies. I mean, I love the 80s and 90s horror stuff. That's great. And obviously that will keep things afloat for them, you know, because a lot of people want that stuff. And I do too. But I'm even more excited about this trend of Val Lewton and classic monster movies that we're getting. So this is a new 4K scan of the original camera negative. It looks great. There's a new featurette called You'll Never Get Rid of Me, Resurrecting the Body Snatcher, which is really great. That's one of the things that Karloff says to the doctor. He's like, you'll never get rid of me. Anyway, that's super cool. There is an audio commentary with author and historian Steve Haberman and director Robert Wise that's actually ported over from the original Val Lewton box set DVD. And that's a great track because obviously Robert Wise is no longer with us. So it's nice to have him in the mix, you know, giving his memories of the thing.
What intrigued me about it and intrigued Boris Karloff particularly was the relationship between the cab driver and the doctor, because there was some marvelous antagonism from the doctor to the cabman, and the duel that went on, marvelous scenes between the two. And Karloff realized or felt that this was a chance for him to show that he, Karloff, was an actor and not just some kind of a monster to be in films, that he could really hold his own with top actors in town. And he had to prove that with a man named Henry Daniell, who was one of the top English character actors in Hollywood at that time. I'm talking now about 1944, 45. And so Karloff saw this as a chance in those scenes, the kind of duels between the two, duels of personality and viewpoint and dialogue, that he could hold his own with Daniel, and he did. They're some of the best parts of the film for me are those two or three sequences where they're kind of, I call it, dueling with each other in terms of their philosophies.
What the devil's the matter with you? Everlastingly creeping about? What do you want?
Mr. Gray wants...
I don't wish to speak to Mr. Gray. Tell him there'll be no more business between us.
Good afternoon, Toddy.
Oh, well. Seems that I should have the pleasure of speaking to Mr. Gray myself. You can go.
Now, that wasn't a friendly thing I heard, Toddy. Not at all friendly.
That has nothing to do with it. You've decided to do more lecturing and less dissection. It's better for the students. And that's the end of the matter.
Well, you know what you want and what you don't want. And there's the end of business between us. But we'll still be friends, Toddy. I'll be stopping by once in a while to see you and Meg. For auld lang syne.
I suppose I can't prevent that. For auld lang syne.
So that's a really good track. And then they've included the entire documentary, Shadows in the Dark, The Val Lewton Legacy, which was also part of the Val Lewton box set that came out. And it's a really great, you know, documentary with, you know, Scorsese and a bunch of others. I think Friedkin's in there. Just a bunch of really cool directors and film scholar folks talking about Lewton and his history. I think one of it's about like 70 minutes, maybe it's a little less, maybe it's an hour. I can't wait. Somewhere between an hour and 70 minutes. And it's just a great overview of Lewton, the kind of thing that you can watch and will sort of spur you into wanting to watch more of his stuff. So that's all included on this disc. And I think that makes it a must purchase in my mind. You know, so anyway, great stuff. If you're a fan of Karloff and you haven't seen it, I'd be highly surprised if you didn't dig him in this movie. It is The Body Snatcher.
Very cool. Yeah, I definitely want to check that out. And I'm excited for their Universal Collections. I guess they're called Universal Horror Volume 1 and 2 are coming. So
yeah,
a lot of cool stuff coming from Scream. Okay, so my next one is a Blu-ray. It has just been announced. It may even be up by the time you hear this. It's just been announced as a Shudder acquisition. And this is a much talked about Japanese horror movie. I think it's Japanese. It is called One Cut of the Dead.
Very cool.
And I bought the disc. So Third Window Films is the UK company that put out a double disc Blu-ray of it. Although it is marked region B on the back, this is, I can confirm, a region-free disc. This will play in any player anywhere in the world. You could find it via DiabolicDVD.com here in the U.S., or you can order it straight from Amazon UK and you'll get it no problem. And I've heard a lot about this movie. It's been making a huge splash in the festival circuit, but mostly because the budget on it. So it's a zombie horror comedy, and the budget on it was about $27,000, and it ended up making 1,000 times its budget when released in Japan.
Whoa!
So this is a monstrous hit of like Blair Witch proportion, or you know, something along those lines. It's a very low budget movie with a lot of heart in its soul, and I don't want to tell you too much, but I will give you the basic gimmick, because the thing is, it is a gimmick movie, and if you don't know the gimmick, I don't know if you'd stick it through. But basically, the first 35 minutes is a one take zombie movie.
Huh.
It's literally, there's no cuts unless they're very cleverly hidden. It's really well done. But it is literally, you're getting a 35 minute zombie movie that is just it's a pretty straightforward story. And so that's the thing. It's like, there's not much new you could add to the zombie genre at this point. Once in a blue moon, you'll get something like The Battery, or, you know, something along those lines that's just a little different and unique and interesting. So this is pretty straightforward, but the gimmick aspect of it is really well done. And so once you're done with the wow factor of, wow, how did they do that? The movie then turns and kind of gives you, basically, you go back to a month before the movie, and they give you the context of what you just watched. And I got to tell you, the last half hour of this movie, after sitting through that impressive technical aspect of the first half hour, the last half hour is all payoff. And it's done in such a way that you don't even realize that the movie's going to pay off when you get there. But I was just smiling ear to ear. And I'm going to give you this one comparison, and you will totally get it. It is the Bowfinger of horror movies.
Whoa.
And that is, it's just one of those really pleasant surprises where you get everything. And that's what I want out of the movie going experience, is I want to get it all. And you get it all. You get a horror movie, you get a comedy, you get a movie about loving the movie making process. It's just fantastic. And so, you know, that this leaked out on Amazon Prime prematurely before this disc came out, which is really, under normal circumstances, kind of catastrophic for any release. And so I was nervous it was going to damage the possibility of it getting a US release, but thankfully Shudder picked it up. So I don't think we're getting a physical here in America, but realistically, and again, I can show my cards a little bit as a distributor, unfortunately, people don't buy foreign movies here. That is the harsh reality, because I've put out a few through my Dread label, and they are by far our worst performing titles. Wow. I don't know what it is. People don't buy it. And if you want more evidence, you know, Arrow just put out a box set of all the Ring movies in the UK. There's no US version of that.
Wow. I didn't realize that was a UK only. Wow.
It's a UK only region B release. And I had spoken to some of the bigger labels about like The Ring, because you figure it's The Ring. And they're like, yeah, we just don't, the cost to put it out, we're not going to recoup that in the US. And so we get the best of both worlds. Because Shudder, because it's a premium service, they are able to take chances with foreign films. And so it's not as big a risk for them to have several. I mean, a few of my favorite horror movies from last year were foreign films on Shudder. And so it just makes sense that they got this one. But if you're a physical media collector, then I strongly recommend this third Windows Films disc, because it's two discs. The first one has the movie. The second one has a short film from the writer-director called Take 8, which is really cool because it gives you, it's not really horror, but it gives you a little bit of perspective into his filmmaking style. You could see the short and be like, oh yeah, now I totally get why he made this movie after this short. There's a pretty lengthy making of There's outtakes. There's the GoPro footage, which is part of, you know, the one take stuff. There's interviews with the director. There's a Palm instructional video, which will make sense after you see the movie, and a trailer. It's just a fully loaded disc, so it is totally worth having in your collection as well. So
very cool.
Strongest recommendation, and it's not that difficult to find. You could find it on Diabolik DVD or Amazon UK. One Cut of the Dead.
One Cut of the Dead. Yeah, no, this is cool. I saw you post that you had gotten it. I'd seen a couple other people on Twitter and whatnot, horror people, talking about it, and I was like, what is this movie? So I'm excited to check this one out. I do love it when there's, like, you know, a little breakout horror movie that is getting people excited, and, you know, saying the Bowfinger of horror is, like, such a great sell, because it's not giving away that much, but it's certainly enough to hook me. I mean, you had me before that, but then I was like, oh, well, that I gotta see. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you're in for a treat. I think you're gonna love it.
Very cool. I can't wait. I'm definitely gonna check that out. Okay, so I got another Scream Factory. I didn't realize I had two in a row, but I do. So this one is maybe it's horror, but it's a little more germ-based, you know, outbreak-based horror. This is a movie called Warning Sign from 1985.
These are the signs of warning. Symbols of danger. Some are all too familiar. This one signals the most ominous threat of all. By the time you see it, it may already be too late.
I've got a warning flag.
This is not a drill. Seal the building. No one in or out.
See a thing, you understand?
Who are you trying to protect?
Pray for the people trapped inside. Pray they never get out. Warning Sign. Sam Waterston, Kathleen Quinlan.
And It's basically like the short synopsis is that on the back here it says, in the rolling Utah countryside, a small town is the host to a fortress-like research facility, which nearby townspeople believe is developing new advancements in agriculture, but deep within is a top-secret project to create a bioweapon that turns anyone exposed to it into a raging psychotic killer. And so that's a good setup. So basically, there's this really great open where a bunch of the scientists are, you know, they're in their full, you know, gear, and everybody's zipped up, and they're really excited because they've gotten the, you know, I don't know, I guess the last version of this thing they've been working on, you know, which we come to find out is this really bad thing. And they're trying to take a picture. And it's really funny, too, because it's the actor is G.W. Bailey, who plays, like, not the commandant, but the like police lieutenant guy in Police Academy. He's a security guard in Mannequin.
I love that guy.
So anyway, he's the guy, and he's like, oh, I can't see your faces. Why don't you take off your mask so we can get a picture? And you're like, that sounds like a terrible idea in this, like, you know, locked up facility. And of course, somebody drops one of the vials that has the germ in it, and it's just kicking around on the floor while they're taking this picture. And you're like, oh my God, don't step on that. And of course somebody steps on it, and then it's a slow burn as far as, like, what's going to happen, like, who's infected, how does it really manifest itself. But it's sort of a great setup because Kathleen Quinlan plays, like, the security woman, and so at a point when some kind of biohazard is detected, she gets this warning, she has to lock down the whole facility. So a whole bunch of people are still in there, including Richard Dysart from The Thing. He is the doc from The Thing, if I recall, who has an interesting mishap with the paddles that you shock people with in The Thing. Anyway, so he's in it, and he plays a major, sort of a decent-sized role. But so everybody's freaking out, like, you know, let us out of here. It's not a big deal. there's this whole miscommunication about what actually happened. And then what's interesting is that Sam Waterston is on the outside, and he is the sheriff of this small Utah town, and his wife is Kathleen Quinlan. So he's like very concerned about what's going on. Suddenly Yaphet Kotto shows up in like full, like, Midnight Run mode, except not, you know, not so funny. You know, like Alonzo Mosley FBI, at least there's like some humor with that. And I do find it funny that Yaphet Kotto has this interesting role of playing like the man. Like, so in this case, he's with the government and he is there to contain this, you know, outbreak and make sure all the protocols are followed so that nobody gets out and nobody infects anybody else. And so he's there trying to put up a front, and sort of he has like his own spiel that he's feeding to the press that's total bullshit. And Sam Waterston is trying to get to the bottom of it by using this other scientist that used to work at the facility, played by actor Jeffrey DeMunn, who became a big part of Walking Dead, as I understand. So
oh,
that's
yeah.
kind of intriguing to see that guy. I like him a lot. Anyway, so, you know, it's just this very tense thriller with this, you know, outbreak happening inside this facility, and you're just kind of wondering how it's going to resolve itself. Can it resolve itself? Is everybody going to die? What's going to happen? Is somebody going to try and get out? You know, what's the story? And I think it's pretty well done. The director, Hal Barwood, he wrote Dragon Slayer, and he did a couple other scripts, I want to say, around this time. But this was his feature debut, and I think it's a pretty good debut. Like, it's pretty solid for what it is. So anyway, fun, enjoyable, tense thriller. Special features include new interviews with the director and the producer, and an old audio commentary with the director where, you know, they cover some of the same ground, but still intriguing to hear him talk about the process on a first film and, you know, his history as a writer and all that stuff. So I dug it. It's a good little movie with a good cast and definitely underseen and underappreciated. Like, if you like those sort of outbreak movies, and I'm kind of a fan of them, myself, I feel like I get sick more often than I'd like. And, so I'm fascinated by germs, and I've become a bit of a germaphobe, and so outbreak movies for some reason have an appeal to me. I can't explain. But anyway, it's solid. It's a good time. Warning sign from Scream Factory.
Nice. Okay, well, pick number 5 is one that I am almost certain you are going to appreciate and enjoy. I haven't seen this movie in years, but I managed to get it. I think it was like $6 on Amazon. It usually floats between $6 and $10. It's from 1997 with the great Bill Murray, and it is the underrated The Man Who Knew Too Little.
Oh, nice.
There's a new name for action. For irresistible. For deadly.
Whoa, that was loud.
What are you, CIA? Mafia?
Both.
Wallace Ritchie is about to be mistaken.
Yo, matey, you just stabbed me with your pen.
For a real secret agent.
Daddy, may I please borrow the keys to the station wagon?
He thinks it's all just a game. But they're dead serious.
I've never seen a dead body before.
Well, you gotta check and see just how dead they are. You know, I could be able to catch this.
You are so twisted.
He's got the courage of a lion.
Please don't kill me, man. I'll give you anything. I'll give you all the money I got.
The strength of a bull.
Fabulous.
You said nothing about American Superman.
You're a sweet little pocket rocket. What fun.
And the reflexes of a cat.
Door's locked. Okay.
Those real cops?
Can I see your driving license?
No, you may not.
This fall.
That is so refreshing.
The intelligence community gets a little less intelligent.
Do I get a last request?
You mean like a cigarette or something?
I had something more substantial in mind.
A cigar?
The man is a god.
I'm sorry, I was a little insensitive. But I'm a hitman.
Bill Murray is...
Oh, time out, I got something in my eye.
The man who knew too little.
Thanks. Nice working with you.
This I saw this in theaters. I was one of like three people there. For whatever reason, this is one of Bill Murray's least performing and talked about comedies. Even though I remember at the time he made a guarantee that if you were not satisfied with this movie, he would pay your ticket. That was part of the promotion on The Man Who Knew Too Little, is that he guaranteed your satisfaction or he would give you your money back. And I get it. He plays a guy named Wallace Ritchie who works for Blockbuster Video.
Oh, that's right.
And he is, you know, he's a little bit of a neurotic, weird mess. He wanted to be an actor, but he ended up working at a video store, which is very familiar. And he's out in London visiting his brother, a surprise visit to his brother. His brother is having a very important meeting with delegates from the country and needs to get rid of Wallace because he doesn't want to get embarrassed by him, because he tends to be one of those, it's that kind of brother that's just a little might say the wrong thing. And so New in Town is basically this interactive theater group where basically you could pay to be a part of some sort of like sort of conspiracy where you walk in on your gal with another guy who's a criminal, and basically you get whisked away on this adventure that's supposed to last a few hours. Anyways, he unbeknownst to him, ends up answering the phone maybe 2 minutes before he should, and he actually intercepts a real spy's hitman's orders. And so he's kind of going along with this whole thing as if it's fictional and trying to do multiple takes of things because he feels that he didn't perform as well as he should have. He just is considering live theater. But he's really a spy. He is actually doing a spy's work and doesn't know it. So hence The Man Who Knew Too Little. But as the movie escalates and there's like hitmen after him, they bring in Alfred Molina is like this infamous butcher that they bring in to take him out. It just keeps escalating and escalating. And it's one of those type of comedies where it's a comedy of errors, where the deeper it gets in, it's like the more convoluted the scenario becomes, and it's funny to us, the audience. And I mean, Bill Murray has just got such great dialogue. I mean, at one point he gets pulled over by Interpol and does this whole gag about like, you know, basically giving away who he is, that he's a spy, and he takes out his talking device and this and that. And then so he's just having a snack with the cop, and he's like, so what's it really like? And he's like, well, you know, there's the benefits, but then there's the negatives, like torture. You know, it's like the traditional like Bill Murray delivery. It's wonderful.
That's awesome.
But yeah, this is just, it's such a fun movie. And again, it came after he kind of had the 1-2 punch of Groundhog Day and What About Bob, which I think are two of his best. And so this was not too far after it. And it was before he kind of delved into the whole Rushmore, Wes Anderson, I'm going to be a serious actor from here on out. It's probably the last straightforward Bill Murray comedy that I remember. It's just fun. Not enough people talk about it. I think it's actually a really fun, witty movie. The Blu-ray doesn't have much on it, but it looks great. It's got an audio commentary with the director, John Amiel, who ended up doing a ton of TV stuff. And it's just a blast, man. The Man Who Knew Too Little.
That's great, man. I hadn't thought about that movie in a while, and I was working at a Blockbuster Video when it came out. So I remember that being a thing for sure. I was just thinking, another one that is the year before this, in that limbo between the Groundhog Day, What About Bob, and then Rushmore, is Larger Than Life, where he inherits an elephant. And I think that's a really, it's from the director of Quick Change. And I think it's a really sweet and funny movie that is way better than people give it credit for. So, you know, between The Man Who Knew Too Little and Larger Than Life, I think people are missing out on some Bill Murray they could be enjoying.
Yeah.
I just had to buy that, The Man Who Knew Too Little, because it's $6.34 for the Blu-ray. Yeah. And I'm like, I got to have that. So,
yeah.
So
yeah,
thank you for that.
You got it, man.
I had to do it. Okay. So my number five is a little movie that I had heard of, but it was sort of brought back onto my radar in a big way when Panos Cosmatos was on the Movies That Made Me, the Trailers from Hell podcast. And yeah. He chose as his topic what I think it was, he called it futuristic fascist police state movies. So, you know, I'm trying to remember, you know, he's like Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. And I think he talks about THX 1138 and a couple others. And he also talked about this movie that I'm going to recommend, and it's called ZPG. And that's Zero Population Growth. It's from 1972.
As of today, childbearing is herewith forbidden.
Oliver Reed and Geraldine Chaplin in a new film about a most frightening future.
Mummy, you're my mommy.
Doctor, I want to have a baby.
That's impossible, Carol.
I know, but I want my own baby.
You know that's impossible, Carol. No one is allowed to have a baby for the next 22 years.
ZPG is a motion picture that shows what can happen.
What do you think you're doing? One word from me and you and her and the baby have had it!
This could happen to you any day now. Any day now. ZPG. ZPG. Rated PG.
This is a Kino Blu-ray. It came out a while back. I want to say last year, maybe early in the year. It's a little bit of an older release, but I dug it out. I had gotten it and I just hadn't watched it. And so it's pretty cool because the setup is that it's like in the tradition of something like Logan's Run or Soylent Green. You have this like dystopian, you know, futuristic society that is in a sort of an overpopulation situation, and they have ruled a new policy that any citizen, basically they're hoping to curb the overpopulation. So they've put a ban on childbirth for the next 20 years, and anybody that has a child will be basically killed. They have this punishment system where this like helicopter thing comes in and drops this dome on people, and then it basically suffocates them over a period of like 12 hours or something. It's pretty horrible. So it's meant to deter people from doing this. And in the interim, they give people these like robotic kids. They're kind of like somewhere between Chucky and Teddy Ruxpin. So they're pretty fucking creepy, and their mouths are really weird. Anyway, so we open on Oliver Reed and Geraldine Chaplin. She's, of course, daughter of Charlie Chaplin, was in a bunch of stuff in the 70s. Great actress. And they are in line to get one of these robot babies, and they get almost to the front of the line, and Geraldine Chaplin is like, nope, I'm out. I just can't do this. I don't want anything to do with this. And so they go home, and they have this really interesting job where they work at like a museum, like I forget what year this is set in, but they have a museum of the 70s. So they have like a car and like a gas pump and like cats and dogs, because apparently they are extinct. So they have like a display with, you know, animals, and then they have like this scene that's like a 70s couples hanging out kind of thing. So Oliver Reed and Geraldine Chaplin play one of the couples, and so they sit there and they drink wine in this like, I guess what is supposed to be like a 70s apartment, and people watch them interact as part of the show. So that's their gig. Anyway, so she tries to talk Oliver Reed into like, hey, maybe we should have a kid, and he's like, we can't do that, that's not legal. And then she kind of doesn't tell him, and they have sex, and she gets pregnant. And so then they have the kid, and it becomes this whole thing. And so they're dealing with like hiding it, trying to deal with what else they can do. And if other people find out, like they will turn you in and fuck you up. So it's like, how do they get out of this predicament they've put themselves in? But it's just one of those movies that's kind of fun to watch because it's, you know, THX 1138 adjacent. And I like those dystopian future movies. They're just intriguing to me. So I don't know. I like this one. I'm glad Panos recommended it. That was a big seal of approval for me because obviously I'm a huge fan of his. So definitely worth a look. It's got an audio commentary from film historian Steve Rifle, who I don't know, but I like the track, what I heard of it. But yeah, this one's pretty rare. It's gotten a DVD release, but it feels like it's pretty under the radar as far as, you know, the big sci-fi movies of this period, like the Logan's Runs and the Soylent Greens and stuff. So if you like those movies, I think you dig ZPG.
Very cool. I'll have to check that one out. Well, that's our five picks, but my quick runner-up is a title that you are a big fan of. I'd never seen it until last night. I took advantage of a recent Warner Archive sale, and I picked up Brewster McCloud.
All right.
Which is a different kind of film from the director of MASH, which is Mr. Robert Altman. And I really don't know what the hell to say about this movie. Other than Brewster McCloud is Bud Cort, who lives underground. He lives under the stadium, the Houston Astrodome, and has aspirations to build wings and fly like a bird. But then there's a bird out there that it's pooping on people, and the poop is killing them. I think he controls them or something. But anyway, more importantly, because it's a wild kind of comedy drama, I guess. But more importantly, this is the debut of the goddess that is known as Shelley Duvall.
Yes.
And everyone knows how much I love Shelley Duvall. She's 21 years old in this movie. First time she's ever appeared in a feature. Cute as a button.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Astrodome, the eighth wonder of the world. My name is Suzanne Ferris, and I'll be your tour guide for the next 45 minutes to an hour. So please feel free to ask questions at any time. And if you must leave, like to go to the bathroom or something, please notify me.
By the way, where is the bathroom?
Where is the bathroom? Well, there are bathrooms every 50 feet, but they're not really bathrooms, you know. They don't have a tub or anything like that. All right, our first stop will be down in the Dome Skeller. It's 25 feet underground, and it's about the only place you can go that far underground in Texas and not strike oil. All right, if you'll just please follow me, we'll be going down there right now.
Oh, sir, do you have my change for this, this half a dollar?
Really, I can't. Oh, excuse me, you can get drinks and things later if you just please stay with the tour. I'm sure you really like it up here. I mean, one time we watched television in this room, about six televisions there. Y'all will get to hear something, too. Right, the scoreboard. Even though it's so big, it's just operated by this small room that has a really complicated computer inside of it. I mean, the other day I saw some NASA space officials fooling with it, and they turned out some pretty interesting stuff. But just think, if somebody really intelligent got hold of it, what they could do. I mean, it could probably work out the problem. Oh, look, it's all sounds that better in here. He just likes my tour a whole lot, I guess.
Bud Cort's super young in it, too. I don't recall seeing Bud Cort this young before. And also Sally Kellerman, who I love. It's just an incredible cast, really bizarre, wacky movie. And it made me realize that Shelley Duvall ended up working with Robert Altman quite a lot. So next on my list is Three Women, which both Criterion put out on disc and I believe is actually streaming on Shudder right now. So
yes.
That's on my list to check out after my brain can come down from the high of Brewster McCloud. So
I'm so glad you checked it out.
That's my follow-up pick, thanks to you.
I'm so glad you checked it out. I'm glad you liked it. It is weird and difficult to... That description is pretty close, but I mean, it just doesn't encapsulate what you experience when you see the movie, and it will definitely be too weird for some people, but I love it a lot. I'm so glad that it came out on Blue, and I mentioned it on our Warner Archive episode that we did, and I highly recommend people snag that if they can. So I have my quick bonus, and this is one that I got to watch with you and our friend Brendan Small the other night.
Oof.
We had a movie night.
We're going there, huh?
Yes, we're going there. We had a movie night at Brendan's place, and that was a blast. And next time, I'm going to let you pick the movie. But we made a ruling, and we came up with Hard Ticket to Hawaii from 1987.
Hard Ticket to Hawaii. It has it all. The awesome, pristine beauty of the land. The warm caress of perfect beaches. The tantalizing wetness of the blue Pacific. Hawaii. It's a great place to visit, but you wouldn't want to die there. Four of America's finest, ready and willing to pay the price for paradise. They're undercover, but not under-equipped. On this mission, there's hard flying, hard fighting.
Agents are everywhere.
Have no mercy. Kill them all.
That was our pick for the movie that night. This has just come out on Blu-ray from Mill Creek. It's actually a nice special edition. It's a new transfer of the movie. It's got a pretty weak introduction from Andy Sedaris, which we watched before the movie. It also has an audio commentary from him, which I didn't get a chance to listen to yet. But this was one that I remember, again, Elric Kane being a big fan of on our, I think maybe our Bonkers episode. And it's another one that, like Brewster McCloud in some ways, is a little difficult to encapsulate.
Please try to describe this movie.
I love that the letterbox description is: a man with a bazooka helps defend air freighters Donna and Taryn against drug smugglers and a snake. And that's actually not a terrible encapsulation.
Yeah, that's about it.
So yeah, this movie is freaking weird, really weird, and I know it's like well known and YouTube clipped to death online, but I don't know that I'd ever seen it, and I think it was a first time watch for all three of us, and it's something else, you know. It's totally bizarre, and like, I mean, I don't want to have like a stupid shortcut, like if Tommy Wiseau did an action movie, you know, like that just seems so reductive, although not totally inaccurate, because there are some scenes that just don't make any sense and just go on for way too long. And there's a snake that gets loose that looks like a really evil Muppet that's really entertaining to watch.
That snake. Quite a character.
Yes, quite a character. So, so how did you feel about Hard Ticket to Hawaii, Rob?
I thought it was good mindless entertainment for an evening after a wonderful meal.
Yes, wow, that was something else.
Yeah, I started to fall asleep, honestly, from sheer exhaustion or delirium. I don't know which one it was. No, it's fine. I don't put it in room territory or anything like that, but it was something else. It was something else for sure. I don't know if I'm going to be hunting down Malibu Express anytime soon, which is the other movie by this director, but maybe I will. Who knows? Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, these came out in tandem. The Malibu Express came out on Blu-ray. Malibu Express is referred to basically, it's explicitly in Hard Ticket to Hawaii. Elric made a reference to this in our Pure Cinema episode, in that like he's saying that Andy Sedaris is actually way ahead of the Marvel cinematic universe, and that he's incorporating his own film and characters in his films into another movie. I just think he wanted to, you know, plug his own movie and couldn't come up with anything better to have a reason why that poster's on the wall and have his characters talk about it. So anyway, I think that's hilarious too. But
I agree with you. I didn't realize that Malibu Express had Sybil Danning though. So that actually does make me curious.
Yes. No, she can be worthwhile. And anyway, so that's Hard Ticket to Hawaii. And that will close out this episode of the show. Thank you, Rob, of course, for another wonderful stack of cool stuff.
Thank you, man.
Got me a lot of things I need to watch. Thankfully, I got ahead with one of them, and I'm glad I did. Small Town Crime.
We do buy each other's recommendations, as is evident by this episode. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, there's a lot of good recommendations here, and I'm not talking about my stuff. Like that One Cut of the Dead sounds great, and I can't wait to check that out. So anyway, thank everyone for listening. Everybody have a wonderful and Blu-ray-filled week, and Rob and I will talk to you in about a month's time. Bye-bye.